You're listening to a special edition of Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is The Harpeth Trace, myspace.com/TheHarpethTrace, HARPETHTRACE. We're going to start by playing the first couple tracks off of the album On Disappearing, then we'll get into some interview and some live stuff, so stick around. This is Is Good on killradio.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Harpeth Trace. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you, John?
I'm not unwell, thank you. You must be exhausted, though. You just drove down from Davis, is that correct?
Yeah. We played in Davis last night, and I'm frankly more exhausted from hauling my amp three blocks over here. I'll catch my breath.
I wasn't even sure where Davis was when you sent me the message saying you were coming down from there. I just looked it up on the on MapQuest, and it's like it's near Greenland. it's out there.
Yeah.
So just give us a sort of brief introduction. Who are you, and what do you bring to the Harpeth Trace?
Okay. Well, my name is Josh. The other we're a trio. Barry plays bass, and Rob plays drums, and I play guitar and sing. It's a very collaborative project. We all write little bits, we all write little bits and bring them in, and kind of expand on them and stuff like that. So. So each of us brings a pretty significant part to the trio.
So that's actually kind of an unusual setup for a band, because usually you have sort of the one person that does the bulk of the songwriting and then maybe even writes the arrangements for the rest of them.
I would say I do the bulk of it, I guess, but we've like on the album that you just played a few songs from, the second song that you heard, Georgia May, started with a drum part that Rob wrote. And everything else was layered over the drum part, actually, which is kind of, I had never done that before. It was a really fun way to work, actually. So,
did this trio kind of spontaneously form, or did it start with just you writing songs, and then you found some friends to play with, and
yeah,
then
it wasn't spontaneous at all. It was painstaking. Originally we had a different bass player who's a great bassist named Rune Freeman, who was in my old band Boxing, and she and I took a little while finding a drummer. Rob was the perfect fit, as it turned out, and then she left, and Barry came in about a year and a half ago, I would say, something like that. So it's been just the three of us for the last year and a half, though.
So now, and tell me about this. This is an unusual name for a band, the Harpeth Trace.
It's a mouthful.
It makes you think it's a trio. I don't know why. It's the word trace, I guess.
I've always known that that name is a mouthful, and I'm hearing that more and more recently. I'm catching a lot of flack for it right now.
Oh, because of it. It being a mouthful?
Yeah, absolutely. There was, and the
but it sticks in your head, so.
I guess so. I hope so. I hope it does. The Falling James from the Weekly was nice enough to give us a nice little write up for our show tomorrow night, and spent half of the write up deriding us for our name. So there you go. But the name itself comes from it's the name of a street in Nashville that I lived on for about 2 years, quite a while ago.
All right, cool. Why don't we'll jump into a live song, and then we'll talk about some of the roots.
Okay. All right,
sounds
good.
What would you like to play for us first?
First, I'll play. I'm going to play "The Man and the Cousin," which is the title track of our EP that came out like early 2006. The Cousin.
Just for our audience sake, give us a sense of what we're looking at here in the room. What you're going to be playing on?
Well, I'm playing. I've got my electric guitar, and I've got some pedals. And an amplifier, and I'm going to sing into the amplifier as well, which is going through some of the same effects that the guitar is. And this is the first time I tried it, and I've set it up in all of 3 minutes, so if it doesn't work, please have mercy.
You can blame me. Blame Kill Radio. Not, blame Bush, actually.
Why not?
Yeah, okay. Let me get this set up for you. All right. My guest is the Harpeth Trace. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Let me be ready.
Well, I came back home to my blue-blooded cousin, who's making the legs of an overcast heap. I said, oh, you should go out, throw stones in the ocean. But he was too busy thinking about a bridge of fear. some 1,000 acres and still is afraid that he's going to die. But the man and the cousin had time for the wasting and go to the grave with the sun in their eyes.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Harpeth Trace. Awesome start to the show, man.
Thanks.
I almost started doing heroin right in the middle of the song.
Yeah, I might adjust those settings a little bit to make it a little less suicide-inducing.
There is this this feeling to the music that's... I hate to use the word psychedelic because it seems like such a cliche, but there is that sort of otherworldliness, you know, dreamlike state to your music. Tell me about that, sort of the quality of the Harpeth Trace that's a little bit dreamy.
I think one of the it kind of ties into one of the I don't know, I guess really one of the central themes of the album that we're just putting out now on Disappearing is about being sort of detached and wandering around. It's ephemeral observation, I guess, and I think we've always kind of wanted the music to take on a similar quality, just like I guess ephemeral is the word, just sort of just bits and pieces and fragments of things kind of floating around in it. I'm a huge daydreamer. I'm a total space cadet, so it's the music is probably a reflection of that as well.
And so do you think all the elements of your music sort of capture that idea, from the lyrics to the bass lines to the drums and everything? They're all kind of emulating that idea.
Yeah, it's really, it's the lyrics are, they're, I wouldn't go so far as to say they're like they're not, they're certainly not random, but it's very hard. It would be very hard for somebody else to look at a song that I've written the lyrics for and say, oh, this is a song about this. This is a song about this particular day or this particular person. It's sort of, I don't think of them that way, at all. They're just, you know, it's, pieces of this, pieces of that. There are themes, I guess there are themes, but they're not literal stories or anything.
What are some of these themes that you find yourself continually coming back to?
Well, I guess wandering and observation are sort of a couple of them. I think I'm trying to think of a really poetic way to say this. I guess like a kind of like feeling like a poverty of the heart, maybe. Is that
I like that, yeah.
Just feeling totally bankrupt, like emotional bankruptcy, I guess, is a big theme. I've a lot of the songs on the two albums that we've, or the album and EP that we've made, were kind of written at times where I felt especially just sort of at the end of a certain rope or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Is there a blues element to your music, you think, or an influence of some kind?
I wouldn't say that there is, although I've seen that word a couple times in reviews of our music. I'm always a little bit surprised, but I guess there might be.
Maybe it's just the thematic content, just the idea of, you know, at the end, you know, at the end of a rope and reaching out and wandering and searching for something.
Yeah.
You mentioned that the name comes from a street in Nashville, and just the word Nashville is charged with all sorts of musical inferences.
Sure.
What were some of the early influences that got you sort of involved in music?
I would say I never ever for a second considered making music in any sort of serious way, making music for anybody else, until I heard Guided by Voices. That was... I think just the fact that they made those amazing early songs on a four track in a basement was just like, I know there's a million other people out there saying the same exact thing right now. Like, oh yeah, same thing. It was just, you know, it was,
was it just the idea that the music was accessible, or was there something about the music itself that
made
you inspired?
Well, the songs were great, but it's sort of, you know, I mean, it's very like, it's just so attractive. It's so, it's like, it's this, it's just such a shimmery gold coat to know, you know, like that, you can record your own music. You can record, and now it's a lot more common, obviously, with all the, you know, everybody has, some program on their computer where they can do that, but, you know, just the notion of getting a four track and plugging in a microphone and writing songs and being able to play those songs for people, being able to play to multi-track, to play multiple parts and play an arrangement of a song that you'd written for somebody else was just like over the top, amazing. Just the possibility of that. And of course, Guided by Voices, you know, Robert Pollard, is an amazing songwriter too, which, you know, so it's a little deceptive.
At the time that it occurred to you, like, oh, hey, maybe I can do this, did you feel like you had the sort of songwriting skills to really go for it, or were you just sort of testing the waters at first?
Well, naively, I guess I thought I probably did. I thought that so much of I just felt like, well, so much of it is like, if you can just, you know, if you can play music and you can record it this way and you can piece it together, like maybe the lo-fi-ness of it will sort of, you know, no matter what it is, will kind of like, will let it float. But, you know,
it's a little harder than it looks,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
How long did it take you from, you know, experimenting with your own four tracks to, you know, actually, you know, producing an album or getting up on stage as a, you know, as a musical act and saying, check us out?
I would say it was about 4 years after I started experimenting with writing and recording songs that I actually put an album out. And that was with my old band, Boxing. We had finished and, you know, self-released an album and an EP. And we're in the middle of a third recording. By the time we actually got around to playing a show, we were just sort of all about recording for quite a long time. So yeah, I was, I think, 27 or something like that the first time I actually set foot on stage to
so I guess in some respects that feels kind of like a late start, huh?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. So. Let's listen to another track from this CD.
Cool.
What do you recommend?
How about let's do an epic so I can screw with my guitar setup. How about Kodachrome Wolves, which is the second to last song on there, the ninth right. song.
Now, actually, sort of on that note of like a song being an epic, it seems like especially in music where you have a lot of these kinds of effects and this sort of otherworldly quality to it, that you can get away with doing a song that's, how long is this song? Well, it's actually only about 5 minutes, but I've had other bands, you know, who would, doing a similar kind of style, you know, where they'll have like an 8 minute song on their CD, which is, you know, you're not going to get that played on the radio. You're making music knowing that it's not going to get played on the radio. So there's almost a sort of a liberating quality to that, because you know that you're not trying to get it on the radio. You're just trying to get it to your listeners.
We've had this sent out to some radio stations, and some of them are playing it, and it's pretty interesting because none of them are playing the same songs at all. It's just like, yeah, it's all over the map. There's no single on the album at all. So, and yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if most of them play it. I mean, it's just so, it's like, it's just not, it's not very radio friendly music.
But I mean, it's cool. You get the sort of freedom to finish the song when the song is really done in your eyes, instead of, oh, we got to get it under 3 minutes so that it, you know, works with the burger commercial we're hoping we'll pick it up or whatever, yeah. You know?
Oh man. Now I hadn't even thought of that. That'd be, I would love to see a burger commercial with one of these songs.
the saddest cheeseburger you've ever seen. Featuring music by the Harpeth Trace. All right, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. We'll be right back with more Harpeth Trace. Post is last celebration.
Yellow mother of God, by my sins, he went out and said,
And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org. Let's let the sirens pass for a second. Oh, of course, they're going to stop right out in front of the building. They're probably coming for me. My FBI files probably ready. My guess is the Harpeth Trace. MySpace.com/TheHarpethTrace. Is that the place to go to get the latest up-to-date info?
Yeah, pretty much. We have a regular, just TheHarpethTrace.com too. But it's hard to it's hard, you know, it's hard for us to keep them both updated. So we'll kind of update one and then the other ones. They trade off.
Let's talk a little bit about performing live. What was the first time you guys went up as the Harpeth Trace to perform live on stage? Did you feel really sort of set, like you knew what you were doing, or was it still kind of experimental at that time?
I think I would say
what you wanted to do, what you wished you would do.
Thank you, John. yes, we knew what we wanted to do. We knew what we wanted it to sound like, and I think the first show we played, we had like six songs or something like that. There was another guy who was playing with us up until like 2 weeks before the show, and he had there's ghosts in here. He had a few of his own songs, and so we kind of parted ways a couple of weeks before our first show. So we ended up with we had six songs. So I think we just played them for a really long time. That was what we did.
And what do you think? You know, did you, after a while, just sort of get into a groove where you guys sort of got more experience doing the live stuff? I mean, there's a lot of things to consider when you're dealing with pedals and effects and things like that. A lot of things that can go wrong. Is there any sort of special techniques you guys developed to sort of bring the recording process to the live scene?
To be honest with you, I feel like we're still figuring it out. We have some shows that are, for whatever reason, everything's clicking on all cylinders and it works. And I think it captures the, you know, it captures the mood of the albums. And sometimes there's just something like it needs an extra element. And I think a lot of that has to do with, I think we're leaving a lot to chance, just like the acoustics in the room, what the, you know, what the mics and the soundboard are like in the room. And, yeah, I kind of wish we had more control over that. And we're talking about ways to do that. We're talking about how we can do that.
You want to jump into a live song now?
Sure. Yeah.
What would you like to play?
I'll play something from the new album. It's called Locked Out and Wandering.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Harpeth Trace.
Locked out and wandering, I went into a shop with flowers on its ceiling for the secret girls and teenage girls. Last time I seen you, you were dead, and so I thought the moment was impossible. The thought of music suddenly stopped. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. My guest is the Harpeth Trace. That was nice, man.
Thank you.
Josh, tell me, what did guitar and singing come for you at the same time, or was there one that you felt like, you know, that really resonated with you and the other one you had to develop after that?
I really like singing a lot, and guitar is one of those things. Like I've got short fat fingers, and I was more interested in writing songs than I was actually playing guitar. And the musicianship is, I guess, something that's never been like it's. I've never been invested in it enough to really, really develop into a great guitar player. So,
do you see it sort of just as a vehicle for getting your songs out there?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And were you like singing as a kid, and it just come naturally for you?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. I've always written. So, like, even when I couldn't play any instrument at all, I've always written songs and just, you know, recorded them into a tape recorder, just like a cappella, banging on pots and pans and stuff like that when I was a kid. So
nice.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you know, a lot of the live show depends on factors outside of your control, you know, like the scene, the venue, and the acoustics and things like that. In your mind, what is sort of the right kind of venue for the Harpeth Trace?
We actually just got back from a tour up the West Coast, and along the way we played a couple of living room kind of shows, and it was the first time that we'd done anything like that, and it took us a little while to figure out exactly how to do it the right way, but by the last one that we played, that's probably the ideal setting, is playing in a living room for like 20 people. That's
interesting. What do you think you like about that? Is just sort of the intimacy and the attention that you get from a smaller audience?
Yeah, I guess that's it. It's the intimacy. I mean, you get to like, I think it's also great to watch music that way. Like we got to watch a lot of really great performers, in those kind of situations on this trip too. And I think there's just, you get, it's just a lot easier to form some sort of personal connection with the music that you're hearing, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely a different experience. When I first started DJing, it was in somebody's living room, where this guy would have, he was a singer-songwriter, and have these like cool musicians come in and play, and then like I would DJ in between their performances. It was all acoustic, and it was a big part of the inspiration for doing this show, because it was like, wow, you can actually just sit in a room and have a concert-like experience and connect with the musicians, which is sort of what this show is all about, you know, without having to deal with the clinking of $7 beers. And
well, let's have a party, man. Let's,
yeah, totally. So it's really interesting, because you don't hear that a lot. A lot of bands say, well, you know, we want the biggest audience we can get and the biggest room we can get, or, you know, they want something, you know, like a small bar, but still there's something sort of safe about having that other noise, you know, knowing that you're out in public. And when you're in a small private atmosphere, it really is just you, your music, and your audience.
That's true. And I think we've had really great experiences playing at clubs too. It's not that we don't like playing in clubs. We've just had a number of experiences where it just feels like what we're doing is getting lost a little bit. There's just too much other stuff going on, and you know, our stuff is pretty focused and quiet. So
what about the recording process then? I mean, that's even one step further, where, you know, you remove the audience and it's really just you and your music. Do you like that as well?
Oh yeah. I think the recording process is probably our favorite thing about being able to make music. It's just, I think there's nothing like the feeling of being holed up in your bedroom or the studio that you're recording your album in, and it just feels like nobody except for me and like these three other people know what's going on right now. It's a secret thing. We can work, you know, we're going to work late into the night, and I don't know, just kind of like woodshedding and getting it figured out is like, that's just the best feeling in the world, I think.
Where can people get this album, On Disappearing?
In theory, it's going to have distribution soon. So, it'll be in stores and stuff. And for the meantime, you can go to theharpethtrace.com, or you can go to our MySpace page, which is myspace.com/theharpethtrace. You can get it on cdbaby.com. You can get it on, I'm not positive that it's on iTunes yet, but it might be, and it's on a bunch of those other download sites if you're doing the MP3 thing. And I think within the next couple of days it'll be at Amoeba.
So this is pretty fresh then, huh?
We're officially releasing it tomorrow, and we're actually having a CD release show for it tomorrow night at Safari Sam's in Los Angeles on Sunset Boulevard. If anybody listening is in Los Angeles,
best parking of any venue in Los Angeles.
Exactly. Easy
nice stage
parking.
Too. Good people, but
good sound,
best parking
great
ever.
Staff. Best parking ever.
Let's listen to a track. What do you recommend?
How about what have we not heard yet? The eighth track is another real dreamy one called Who Knows Where You Are.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is the Harpeth Trace.
Without a trial, international parole.
And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org. Hang out with Josh of the Harpeth Trace. And we're listening to On Disappearing. And this album, is this considered your debut album?
Yeah, I guess so. We had we put out an EP in, I guess it was early 2006. And this is the first full-length album we put out.
And how does the writing process work for you? I mean, do you like have a whole bunch of songs and then you knock it down to the... was it the 10 or 11 that you end up putting on the album, or do you follow each song through to the end and go one at a time?
My preference is to have a lot of stuff to pick from. We ended up cutting a couple songs off of this one, both of which were we thought really good songs, just didn't quite like keep the album moving forward. But yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, I would, you know, have like 50% more songs than I actually need. And I've worked that way in the past, but just haven't, like, I don't write quite as many songs as I used to. So it's pretty hard to, it's hard to do it exactly that way. But
how does the song usually come to you? Is it, you get an idea for a song, for a, you know, a theme, or do you get a lyric stuck in your head, or?
No, it's always music first. Like I always, we have a few different ways that we work. Sometimes, like, you know, the other guys will write a part or have an idea or like a texture or a sound or something like that, and we work from there. But more often than not, I just sit down with a guitar and start playing stuff. And when some combination of chords sounds good, then I'll go from there and come up with another combination of chords that could be another part. And then the lyrics are always like the very, very, very last thing.
And the songs just kind of write themselves then, huh? Did you get the idea for the lyrics of the song based on what you've written musically?
Yeah. So, I mean, I might have like, yeah, it's, I mean, usually, in fact, sometimes I'll sort of like find myself singing a few words along with it and then just like, or like usually kind of like nonsense gibberish stuff just to kind of come up with a vocal melody. And I'll usually try to find words that rhyme with the gibberish or sound like the gibberish or something like that. And that's kind of like, that's always a good jumping off point. It's like that. You ever do that like spin art when you were a kid, you put the thing on,
right.
It's like the gibberish has no meaning obviously, but I always try to find stuff that sounds like the gibberish and I don't know. It's kind of a freeing way to work, so.
Let's jump into another live song.
Okay.
You want to try a cover this
song?
Yeah,
yeah. There's this Scott Walker song called Duchess I've been playing. We've been playing as a band now and again, and I'll try that.
All right, cool. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is the Harpeth Trace. Check it out.
In your Rembrandt swears, your children alive and still breathing. It's your look of love when you're coming across. Makes me feel like a thief when you're bleeding. Touch it. Light up your candles for me. Touch it. Girl's grave. It's your young girl. lover's face that I breathe in. Touch your soul, light up your candles for me. Touch your soul, put all your love back in me.
Nice, man.
Thank you.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Harpeth Trace. Tell me, Josh, where are you guys playing next? I know you have your CD release and a couple other shows, right?
Yeah, we have... well, we're playing on KXLU tomorrow at 5, so you could tune into 88.9 or KXLU.com at 5 o'clock Pacific tomorrow. And then tomorrow night, we're playing at Safari Sam's. And that's going to be a great show. The Cat Hair Ensemble, who's fantastic, just like old European folk influence kind of stuff. A lot of Django Reinhardt in there. They're a fantastic band. They're playing first, Kind Hearts and Coronets, which is a great psychedelic kind of like they remind me a lot of Love. Like, not that they sound a lot, they don't sound exactly like Love, but they just remind me of Love. They're playing before us, and then. A band that I've never seen play, but they sound really good, called Chief Nowhere, is playing after us. So that starts at 8:30 tomorrow night, Safari Sam's on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles.
Nice.
And then one more, which is a little ways out, but February 19th at the Echo, in honor of the Chris Specials CD release. And I know the Chris Special is playing on your show as well.
On the 18th.
Soon, so.
I'm making a theme of having people on the day before their CD release show, apparently.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And this episode will be available for download either later tonight or tomorrow from myspace.com/thisisgood, and it'll also be podcasts on iTunes. And let's sign off with one more track from the album On Disappearing, which will be available tomorrow.
Okay, how about, let's hear the album version of Locked Out and Wandering, which is the third song on there.
You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org with my guest, the Harpeth Trace.
Locked out and wandering, I went into a shop with flowers on its ceiling, with the super girls and teenage cops. Last time I'd seen you, you were dead, or so I thought. The moment was impossible. The far off music suddenly stopped. Back my way, I tried to move and I was fairly free.